The Mets pitching continues to be great, even as these have these wave of guys who are coming back. Frankie Montas, Sean Manaea. What do you got on the Mets pitching?
Was there about a dollar for every time I heard someone use the phrase Mets pitching lab without defining it? I wouldn't have $765 million, but I would have a lot more dollars. And so, Buster, what I did was dig into the numbers this week to try and define it. And what I came away with were three core values that I discovered in digging into the Mets pitching lab numbers. The first of which is we are going to attack hitters using a wide arsenal. Buster, you know that the average major league starter uses four pitches. The average Mets starter uses 5.2. Senga's at six, Holmes is at six, McGill's at five, Peterson's at five, and Canning is at four. So why is that so instructive? Well, because the Mets as a staff, their starting rotation ranks 16th in the majors in stuff plus, as you know, that grades the physical characteristics of every pitch. Theirs is 97, 100 is average. So it's an average staff from the perspective of stuff with the best starter ERA in the sport. It's 2.84. So when you can
Yeah.
throw all sorts of options at hitters and make them guess and keep them off balance, your stuff doesn't have to be great. You just need a lot of offerings. So that's the first thing. The second thing I wrote down is, Buster, we are going to prevent damage at all costs. Mets starters rank 27th in the majors, the fourth highest walk rate in the major leagues. But I can do you one better. I looked at all plate appearances ending in either a walk or a single. So how often is that guy reaching first base? It's the second highest rate in the National League. Only the Rockies allow a higher such rate. But Buster, that is by design. We know it's the highest ground ball rate and thus the lowest average launch angle and the lowest isolated power. So that's just damage from extra base hits. It's the lowest ISO allowance in the entire sport. All that's by design. And the third thing I wrote down, Buster, is that you have to master a put away pitch. Four of the five Mets starters, with the exception of Griffin Canning, rank in the 65th percentile or better in put away rate. That is strikeouts divided by two strike pitches. Very simple. But Senga has his forkball, McGill has his four seamer, Peterson has his slider, and Holmes has that sweeper slider combo. You don't need great pitchers to have a great rotation when you have a pitching lab that enables you to master a put away pitch, prevent damage at all costs, and use a wide arsenal. David Stearns has cracked the code. And by the way, he's not paying any of those guys top dollar.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, June the 15th, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at the TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG, and I'd love for you to subscribe to the newsletter for less than a cup of coffee a month. Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Well, not the best weekend. First, let's start off. Happy Father's Day to everybody in the audience. Obviously, not the best baseball weekend, not the best weather weekend. I think the Mets play on the field kind of match the kind of blah weekend that we all experienced. The first real, I guess, negative series at Citi Field. Mets have been playing well over 700 ball there. I don't know if you want to call the Jake Magnum, Eric Orsi return, revenge tour. But the Rays always give the Mets trouble. We saw that last year, and I was at a couple of those games in Tampa last year. So be that as the way, the Mets lose three games in the standings. They lose three straight. And now a little bit of a panic. It's almost like Mets up for nothing, rolling against the Nats on Thursday. Senga comes down with the hamstring injury. The Mets hold on. They're up 5-1 on Friday. And really, since that six-run sixth inning, the combination of Blackburn and Kranick, some bad plays in the field, the whole weekend went awry, and away we go, and here we are. And I think one of the things that, and the real theme of the show is pitching regression, because you're going to hear a lot about it. And we'll start off by saying, if you had listened coming in, I thought Buster Olney on the Sunday Night Baseball podcast did a really good job, that show, in breaking down the Mets starting pitching. And I led with that because I think it was important to set up and manage the expectations here about what the Mets starting pitching is, the regression that inevitably was going to come even before the Senga injury, and really the blueprint about how they can navigate this as we are now about 6 weeks away. And with Rafael Devers going to the Giants, you know, one of the first big, and it's really not the trade deadline, big trades of this time of the year happens, it makes you wonder, you know, will teams even wait? Will Stearns even wait for the deadline? Are there teams now out there looking to make some deals? Hard to believe where, you know, there's a, especially in the American League, there's a ton of teams in the wild card race, but it makes you wonder. So anyway, you heard from the baseball, the Sunday Night Baseball podcast, Buster Olney, really what the Mets starting pitching is all about. It's a bunch of really good starters that use a diverse repertoire that are able to pitch around some trouble, keep the ball in the ballpark. And they didn't really do that all the time this weekend. And, you know, despite the high walks and whatnot, they're able to kind of navigate some of the base runners that, you know, have been there. And if you remember last year, I mean, I was ranting and raving, and I kept saying, and it was historical, where the Mets out of the bullpen were walking the ballpark. And the Mets aren't that bad this year out of the rotation. They certainly improved that out of the bullpen. But they're 3.5 walks per nine innings. They're top six in baseball in walks out of their starting rotation. Only the Dodgers, Guardians, Anaheim Angels, Milwaukee Brewers, and Miami Marlins are ahead of them. And, you know, look, you saw it play out today. I mean, Griffin Canning walks five. And even when before this thing got out of control, you know, the Braves had put up 4, 5, 6 runs, it didn't feel like a 6-0 game because the Mets really gave away a bunch of runs because of the free passes, the bases on balls and whatnot. But inevitably, if you look at the Mets rotation, they have been outperforming their results by really, if you look at it, by more than half a run. You know, their FIP is 3.54. Their XFIP is 3.74. Their ERA, their starting pitching team ERA coming into today's game was 2.82. So, you know, there was a feeling of regression that inevitably I think all of us were talking about, were waiting for. And it's not a rationalization. I mean, ultimately, you didn't think Griffin Canning was going to compete for a Cy Young. And I know everybody's down on Tyler McGill, but Tyler McGill is exactly who you thought he was. I mean, look, he's basically a back end of the rotation starter, can occasionally give you top of the rotation performances. He's going to struggle against good offensive teams. Look at the teams he struggled against this year. The Yankees, the Cubs. Ray's not a bad offensive team. Sometimes you look up and down the lineup and you scratch your head and go, how is that possible? Not a bad offensive team. So when McGill has faced, Dodgers hit him. When McGill has faced some of those upper echelon offensive teams, he struggled. That's what back end of the rotation pitchers do. And then they'll tease you and they'll give you a couple of top end of the rotation performances, and you think all of a sudden all is right. No, that's not. That's why they're back end. That's why he's 5-5. That's why he's about a league average, slightly below league average pitcher. That's who he is. That's who we knew he was. So you have that. You know, when you look at your big three, and I know that Senga now is on the injured list, and it looks like he's going to miss probably about a month, which is 4 to 5 starts, maybe 6 starts, depending on how the schedule rolls. But with the All-Star break in between, I think there's going to be about 5 starts he's going to miss. And maybe we'll see him right there at the end, maybe when they get out to the West Coast late in July, or maybe right after that. But you have him. You have Clay Holmes, who now is on some kind of pitch count. I think one of the biggest things on Friday night was that Mendoza, and it looked like it was pre-planned, messed with the formula. The formula all year has been starters go 6, you hand it off to a bridge, which is usually Reed Garrett and Brazenbaum with a sprinkling of Ryan Stanek. Lord help us on that. And then, of course, Edwin Diaz getting the final 3 outs and being dominant in the 9th inning. You know, that's been the formula. They couldn't do that because Holmes is on a pitch count. We'll see how that continues. Maybe that's part and parcel to being in Colorado and having a rough start just a week earlier. We'll see. And then the one who's been, and I was in the building at Citi Field. Well, what great vibes that night at Citi Field. David Peterson coming off a complete game shutout. And, you know, maybe again, you go to the Baseball Savant page, you don't look at it all lit up with all, you know, different types of red and feeling that the process is there. But David Peterson is a guy that throws strikes, gets ground balls, has moxie, you know, doesn't give in to hitters when he's in trouble. And look at it there. He's, you know, a top 20 pitcher in baseball right now. That's a pretty good three. So before we start jumping off the ledge here about the Mets rotation, that's a pretty good three. And Seng is not going to be out forever. What I laughed about when I, you know, heard Singer went down, I saw all the social media posts. Oh, he's out for the year. Here we go again. Same situation as last year. Nonsense. Nonsense. Last year, the guy had a shoulder issue. That's a serious issue. The calf thing was a freak thing that happened probably because, you know, while he was rehabbing his shoulder, he was behind in other parts of his body. You know, a hamstring, and let's not blame Pete Alonso. I know the throws are annoying. That was probably, if that happened, and it was eventually going to probably happen, it was either going to happen on that play, next play, or the next start, it was eventually going to happen. So you have a good three here. You got McGill as your, you know, 500 pitcher. He's got options. You could send him down. And, you know, I think Griffin Canning is who he is. He's a back-end rotation starter. In a lot of ways, he's probably a lot like McGill, where, you know, he's going to probably give you top-of-the-rotation performances. I think he's come a long way from, obviously, when the Mets signed him. And he was pegged to come out of the bullpen, and maybe he still will. And I think very similarly, as a back in the rotation option, he's going to have some stretches where he's really good and other stretches where he's not so good. And I probably could throw Blackburn in there. And before we start complaining about Blackburn, remember, coming out of the bullpen, the routine, all the things that are part of you know, being a big league pitcher and being successful, it's just not something he's done before. And he talked about it. So before we write him off on his next start, let's see him a little bit here. You know, he's a guy that even last summer, before he got hurt, you know, six innings, three runs, wasn't asking a lot out of him. You know, can he do it on the road against good offensive teams? Can he do it against, you know, a team like the Phillies in a big spot? I guess we'll see. But the bottom line is the Mets rotation was due for some regression. And now they're heading into a part of their schedule where they could potentially put the Braves away. They got the Phillies, who got themselves righted, picked up three games in the standings this weekend. They got them next weekend. You know, the Mets have a number of games against their division rivals in the coming weeks. And, you know, you don't want to see them either fall back, or in some ways you could, you know, put the hammer down a little bit here on both the Braves and the Phillies, particularly the Braves with seven games in about a week. And that's a lot harder when you don't have your starting pitching performing at a peak level. But it's not all to despair here, because as you can see, the pitching, and we've talked about this throughout the first 70 games or so, the pitching has been carrying, the starting pitching in particular has been carrying this team. When Diaz was bad, it was the starting pitching that kind of put in them in the situation where they were able to figure out the bullpen and navigate Diaz when he was bad early on. When the bridge to the bullpen was trying to figure itself out, the starting pitching was getting them into the sixth inning. When the offense, and that's really the biggest culprit, when the offense wasn't scoring, it was the starting pitching that was keeping games, you know, 1-1, 2-1, 2-2, whatever. So now it's up to other parts of this team to pick up for the starting pitching, which may not be able to go out there and give you six innings of two runs. You hope they can still go out there and give you six innings, three runs, give you a very average quality start. But, you know, right now that remains to be seen, especially because you've got, like I said, outside of Peterson right now, everybody else has some question marks or is on the injured list. And then the other decision coming to the Mets right now, and I don't think we're there yet, and you know, with Manaea and Montas, and I know this name will continue to come up, with Manaea and Montas still on their rehab assignment, and around the corner, I mean, by the end of the month, they're going to have some big decisions on these two guys. And they got to come back. Unless they're still hurt and they got to go back on the injured list, you can't extend their rehab. They have to come back to the big league club. I don't think Nolan McLain is going to be a part of this. I know he's pitching really well at AAA. It looks like he's, you know, got not much left to prove. Maybe as a bullpen piece, maybe as a piggyback piece. But I don't see that as an option, because right now you have five starters. You have five starters now. With Senga out, you know, Blackburn slides into that spot. And before you know it, you'll have Manaea in there, and we'll see what they do at that point, how they play this out. But, you know, what I was laughing about is just a couple of days ago, heading into the Senga start, Joel Sherman, and maybe we could blame the New York Post for some of the bad vibes. But Joel Sherman was talking about teams calling the Mets because of their excess of pitching. You see how quickly that goes away. Before you know it, you know, already one spot has been taken care of. But it is going to be tricky with Manaea and Montas coming back. You know, there's talk about Montas being put in the bullpen. Manaea clearly is going to be a starter. You know, would it help? And this is the real question out of all of this. We talk about the deadline coming up, and we talk about, obviously, acquiring bullpen arms. And I still think it's going to be really hard. I mean, I've seen names like Ryan Helsley and Aroldis Chapman and guys like that being thrown around. I mean, these are teams that are in the pennant race. I know the Red Sox sold off one of their stars today, but I don't think that was a trade signaling that they're punting. They just swept the Yankees. I think they're just trying to fine-tune the clubhouse and fine-tune their roster going forward. And they just shed themselves of a big contract while they're at it. I don't think it's going to be that easy to find an impact bullpen arm. And you could go out and get all the Justin Garza scrap heaps and hope to find a diamond in the rough and do what they do, or go out and get a Phil Maton, or, you know, this version, you know, this year's version of Ryan Stanek, whatever Stearns wants to do. You know, things will change very quickly in the next 4 weeks. But one of the things I've put out there, and I still wonder in the long run, with Manaea coming back, if Montas could get himself straightened, knowing that there is, I know there's no limitations on him, but he's going to eventually hit a wall. But at some point, can you still keep Clay Holmes going forward as a starting pitcher and help the team win by adding him as kind of that second closer? I mean, he's the perfect guy. When you look up and down this roster, he's the perfect guy in the postseason to basically, and at this point, he might be able to go two innings. In a way like Mariano Rivera used to do back, you know, in the 90s when it was Rivera to Wetland. I mean, he might be able to do that because he's been a starter. Maybe that's part of it. Maybe there's a way, and you couldn't pitch him maybe back-to-back, but maybe there's a way with some instructions, similar to what they did with Buto last year, or what they used to do with Lugo when Lugo was kind of on a schedule where he wouldn't go back-to-back, or when you use them, maybe use them for multiple innings because he'd be down for a couple of days. Maybe that's something that they can implement leading into, you know, later in the year in the postseason. I'm just throwing out an idea. I mean, ultimately, look, you'd love going to postseason series with Peterson, Blackburn, Holmes giving you, Peterson, Senga, Holmes giving you, you know, those six innings to hand it off to the bullpen. But if Manaea comes back and pitches the way you think he could, well, I mean, he's right there when able to get you those six innings. Really, you know, the seventh and eighth leading up to Diaz is something that you might need. And you kill two birds with one stone, where Holmes now has a more manageable inning scenario. You don't kill him as a starting pitcher for next year. And I'm sure he wants to opt out. I'm sure it's not good for him, but I mean, that could still happen. And you still provide some value for the team. So it's an idea that I've been bandied about. I've thrown it out there. I think I even talked about it when I was on Anthony Rivera's Somebody Shape podcast. It really came to my mind this weekend as we see what's going on. Now, the time is not now because the pitching is suffering, but eventually Senga will be back within the next 30 days or so. Manaea is right around the corner. I know Montas is pitching awfully in his rehab down in AAA. You know, maybe he's not an option, but right now, you know, you still have Blackburn. You know, you still have guys in this rotation that could give you six innings, three runs. And really, that's what you need. Because ultimately, and that's what we'll get in the second segment, this offense, which is averaging 5.6 runs per game coming into today's game in the month of June, is starting to show life. Didn't necessarily execute as well against the Rays as much as you want. I mean, they kind of went dead after the early innings of Saturday afternoon's ball game. But this offense is going to have to step up. And you've got Nimmo heating up. McNeil is a big part of this offense. He's going to be a big part of our second half of the show discussion. You have your big three, Lindor and Alonso and Soto. And then who knows, can any of these kids kind of start to hit consistently? Will it be Alvarez? Will it be Beatty? Will it be Mauricio? You know, Acuna had a couple of hits today. Is he throwing himself in the mix? I don't know. I have my doubts about them. So ultimately, I think what's interesting about this time of the year is the Mets have opened up a little bit of a cushion, which they gave back quite a bit of it this weekend, is that they could afford to play the long game. And I think that that's what you saw Mendoza do on Friday with Holmes. I personally don't think my idea about Holmes is what they're going to do. I think he's in the rotation, and I think they're just going to either use six starters or innings limitations to get to the point where, you know, he's a part of the deal in the postseason. But if there's any doubt to that, because think about it. You know, if the Mets go deep in the postseason, he's going to need another, let's say, you know, start a series, maybe two. You're looking at another five or six starts if they go really deep. You're looking at another 25, 30 innings. I mean, this guy could be hovering 180, 200 innings, depending on how much they pitch him. I know I've heard them say that there's no limitations. He's done it before, but he was a closer last year, pitching about 60, 70 innings. I think there's a real possibility that he goes to the bullpen and the Mets try to figure out the rotation. Maybe that's more realistic finding, and I don't think that it necessarily is going to be Sandy Alcantara or Jacob DeGrom. I have told you from the start, I think the deadline is going to be very disappointing, where I don't think Stearns wants to, and, you know, the Giants gave us some good capital for Rafael Devers. I don't think the Mets want to do that right now, unless there's a short thing, and I don't know if Alcantara is a short thing. I don't think DeGrom is realistic. I don't know who's out there right now that's worth ripping up a big pitcher in the farm. And guess what? You don't think they're going to ask for Jonah Tong. You don't think they're going to ask for McClain. You don't think they're going to ask for Sproat. They're going to ask for those guys. You're not getting Alcantara for nobodies or for a bag of balls. You're not. You're not getting him for Acuna or Mauricio or Beatty. You're not getting Alcantara for that. They're going to want to get some young pitching. The pain you feel watching Pete Carl Armstrong across the field in Chicago playing elite defense in center and hitting home runs, and what the Mets had to give up for a rental with Baez a couple of years ago, that's going to be a situation they may be in. Maybe not to give up, get a rental in Alcantara, but to acquire somebody who has the potential to be an ace and give you innings out of the top of the rotation. So I think one of the solutions might be in front of you here. You know, the Mets bullpen has to step up. Think about it right now. Stanek can't be trusted. Brazenban and Reed Garrett struggle against left-handers. Everybody else is a shuttleable arm in there with the Kranichs of the world and the Garzas and guys like that. I know you have Brooks Raley on the horizon as a lefty, potentially. He'll be able to maybe replace the Minter role. We'll see what happens with Castillo as time goes on. But, you know, as you look at the Mets, six innings, three runs, that's what this rotation is all about. It's nothing sexy. It's nothing fancy. It's those outs to Diaz. Diaz is where this game is going to be won or lost as you get down to the nitty-gritty. But in order to get it to Diaz, you need to have the bridge. And the most logical guy to improve that bridge right now is in the rotation, pitching well, and very well might not be able to help them later in the year because he's not ready to stretch himself out into that 180, 200 innings that's going to be required for any starting pitcher that is in this rotation, because the theory is, or the assumption is, the Mets are going to go deep into the postseason. So a lot of questions coming forward. I think the Mets, like I said, no time to panic. Singh is not out. He's not dead. Singh is not out. Let's give Blackburn a chance to get back into his routine. Peterson is doing his thing. You know, McGill and Canning, Griffin Canning, look, six innings, three runs, back of the rotation starters. Manaea is on the horizon. I think that that's a big acquisition. And in a lot of ways, you got to think, does Manaea replace, when Senga comes back, does he ultimately replace Holmes in rotation? Holmes moves to the bullpen, and all of a sudden now you have a dominant 8-9. I mean, think about that. You have six outs, as good as any six outs out there. And that, to me, is a very interesting way of looking at all this, as we assess where the Mets' rotation is, the limitations on Holmes, some of the challenges coming up with the regression, and ultimately, how do they overcome this pitching regression? Well, we'll talk about it after the break. They got to hit a little bit. They're going to have to average over five runs a game. They're going to have to give their starters a little bit of breathing room. And can that happen? Well, it can. And there's one name in particular that I think is key to that. We'll talk about that and more right after this.
And McNeil gets one in the air deep down the right field line, headed toward the corner. And it's out of here! Jeff McNeil with a three-run homer. Just tucked it over the right field wall for his seventh home run of the year. And the Mets jump out to a 3-0 first inning lead.
All right, we're back. So, as I said, there's really nothing that you can do with the upcoming pitching regression that's coming up. The Mets have overplayed their, whatever you want to call it, their talent, their capabilities. I mean, they've overplayed about a half run per game on the starting rotation. You knew that there were eventually going to be some regression, whether that has to do with games at Citi Field, the weather, competition. There's all sorts of reasons why they are where they are. There was no way I ever felt that in this modern game they were able to kind of sustain even the best rotation, the Phillies rotations like that. They're not going to keep opponents to an ERA under 3. And the peripheral numbers, the walks, the expected ERAs that I had cited, about 3.5 to 3.7, that's more aligned. I mean, almost a run a game. More is kind of where some of their fielding independent pitching is. So you can't just all of a sudden say, okay, how do you fix this? Let's go out and go get this starter, that starter. I mean, I'm skeptical about all of that. And then I bring up the elephant in the room, which is Clay Holmes' innings. They're already, and let's see, maybe that was just, of course, at Colorado. They already have thrown it out there that he has to be limited. You want him available for the postseason. You know, he's a guy that you'd like to go five or six innings. If he can't go six innings and he's got very limited starts later in the year, especially as you head into the postseason, unless you have a big lead and you want to rest him, that's a different story. But you got to anticipate there'll be a bit of a dogfight here for the National League East. One of the things that could be is putting Holmes in the bullpen and going out and getting, you know, maybe he's not a Sandy Alcantara type, but another six innings, three runs, quality starter towards the deadline. And you have a bunch of very good, and you heard from the baseball, Sunday Night Baseball crew, Mets look to get pitchers with diverse repertoires, who limit the damage, keep the ball in the ballpark. Nothing sexy. And it seems to have worked for them. And then build up that bridge to Diaz. But you want to know how you can really navigate, at least in the near term, some of the pitching regression, is hit the baseball. Because let's face it, the Mets' offense is underachieved for a good portion of this first half of the year. We know a lot of it is the variability of the runners in scoring position. And guess what? It's probably not the case, but it seems like there was an article, and I think I saw Andrew McCutchen on Twitter talk about it, about the ball being, having more drag on it, about 3 or 4 feet less, it traveling. I did some quick math. It looks like there's going to be about 150 to 170 less homers hit this year than last year. Maybe baseball doesn't think that's significant. But, geez, it seems like every day Soto or Alonso or McNeil or somebody, or Nimmo, somebody in this lineup. And I talked about it last week in Colorado when, for the first time I could ever remember watching a game in Colorado and balls dying on the warning track. It just seems like the Mets are impacted a ton by it, but you can't think like that. So how does this team hit more? You are going to have to live and die with your core players. Your Lindors, your Soto, and your Alonzos have to be good. And they have to perform at expected levels. And I think right now, you're starting to see Soto come around. Lindor and Alonso have been a Lindor and Alonso. Maybe there's a little regression with Alonso, but you feel good there. Where you haven't felt good is your surrounding very good players, your Nimmos and your McNeils. And they are now starting to hit, in particular Nimmo. And I think that's critically important for them to be normal, for them to be productive. For Nimmo, who is not this on-base run creation machine now, he's more of a power-hitting RBI guy out of the two-hole. And McNeil, who's morphed into Daniel Murphy, with power at the second base position, better defensively than Murphy was, and more versatile, where now he could play center field and scouts are calling him passable. These two bats are critically important as they've lengthened the lineup because, let's face it, right now, you don't know what you're going to get out of Beatty. You don't know when Vientos comes back from his hamstring what you're going to get out of Vientos. Acuna has proven to be a backup, a pinch runner, a defensive player. And I'll tell you what about Mauricio. I know he's hit a couple of prodigious home runs. But on Friday night, if you didn't see the alarm signals of how Fairbanks pitched him, a pro elite closer in a big spot, basically off-speeded him to death. What was it? Slidered him to death? Basically slidered him to death. And Mauricio had no shot. I knew after that first swing and miss from Mauricio, I knew he had no shot on Friday. And that tells you a lot. Now, young player coming back, hasn't had a lot of at-bats, was out a year. I understand all that. I get all that. But the approach at the plate doesn't have to be part of that getting back into the swing of things. The approach at the plate tells me a lot. And quite honestly, what I saw against really good pitching is Mauricio is easy to get out. We actually saw it in Colorado last week during that bases loaded, none out scenario where, you know, the off-speed pitch is the easiest way to get him. And, you know, it was basically an 85-mile-an-hour slider, swung and missed, same pitch, called a strike, third one, no shot. He didn't mess around. He wasn't going to throw any fastballs to him. Fairbanks wasn't going to throw any fastballs. So the real key here is, you know, what are those kids going to give you? Vientos is going to come back and somebody's going to go down, either Mauricio or Beatty. It'll be interesting. And right now, it's a flip of the coin who's going to go back. Because they're both pretty much, I mean, I think it'll probably be Mauricio right now, but we'll see. And you really don't know, you know, the bottom third, whether it be Torrens, who's okay, and Alvarez, and then Taylor playing center, and you know, one of Beatty and Vientos. You don't know what you're going to get with that bottom third of the order. So for the Mets to continue to score, not only will they need Nimmo to be really good, I think it's critically important for McNeil to be good. What was funny is that Will Salmon wrote about McNeil's renaissance this year, which really started at the All-Star break last year, where he's hit for power, hitting the ball hard, not hunting for base hits. And I found it interesting in that piece that McNeil talked about when he was slumping earlier in the year, when he came back from the injured list, how he went to the hitting coaches and asked them for help. And these are some of the things that he was looking to do offensively, and he was trying to recapture what he had last year. And I think that goes back to all this gnashing of the teeth and complaining about the hitting coaches. With the biggest thing with the hitter, when you see McNeil's turnaround is coming from McNeil. Maybe it's suggestions from the front office or a hitting coach or, you know, whoever he employs personally. But ultimately, when a hitter does a transformation or has to make improvements, it comes from them. They have to feel comfortable with it. It's their body. It's their career. All you could do is guide them. And that's what you saw McNeil do. And now you got a guy that, let's face it, even with Citi Field, and it does play big, even in right field, although he's taking advantage, as you heard in some of the highlights we gave, that he had the little Utley corner over there. He's taking advantage of it. McNeil is a guy that has turned into this 25 homer, 85 RBI, 270 line drive, versatile second baseman, center fielder, corner outfielder type that really right now plays an important role in the lineup because he's going to provide protection for Pete Alonso. The opposition has been very comfortable pitching around Soto. You saw Baz do it today, Shane Baz. He pitched around Soto, went after Alonso, blew him away. And Pete has been really good at coming through in these situations. And I said this a couple of weeks ago or recently that Pete's been really one of the biggest benefactors of Soto, not because Soto's providing him protection behind him, but because there's been ducks on the pond because they've been pitching around Soto, even when he's struggling. And at some point, you have to think that potentially if Pete continues hitting at a 950, 960, 1000 OPS, that they will start to pitch around him as well. mean, it's surprising that Washington didn't earlier in the week when he got the game-winning double, the game-tying double, I should say, earlier in the week. And that's when McNeil comes into play. And when McNeil is going to be expected to continue, as he did against the D.C. earlier in the week with his game-winning hit, to come through and to be the guy that potentially cleans up the bases when they pitch around Alonso. And I think if McNeil doesn't hit, and if McNeil regresses back to where he was earlier this year or even the first half of last year, I think the Mets are in a little bit of trouble. And then I think the pitching regression will be a problem. It is time for this offense to finally, and again, they've been doing a much better job in June, but they have to sustain this. This offense needs to average five or more runs a game as they go into a series against Atlanta, as they go into a series against the Phillies. I know they got the Pirates later in this month on the road. That's a tough series because those guys pitch. But this offense has to continue to put pressure. And then if any of these kids could find their way, whether it be Alvarez or Beatty, or, you know, maybe I'm wrong on Mauricio, but I don't see him being ready, especially with the way they off-speed him to death, then you have something. Because it's going to be a while before Winker comes back. And sure, at the deadline, can they shore it up with a DH type or a center fielder maybe? Maybe they'll do that. Maybe. It's still a little early to see, hone in on who's really available. Because who's really waving the white flag? The only deals you're going to get now are the kind of deals that Stearns did last year. Picking up Maton and Stanek, who were struggling where they were, and they came here and the Mets fixed them. You could pick up a fixable player right now. I'm not sure. Now, I know I'm saying this on the night that Devers goes to the Giants, but that's a unique situation. So the way that you solve the pitching crisis is with the bats and continue to get the bullpen straight. And actually, the bullpen, in some ways, I think the starting pitching will continue to give you six innings. Maybe instead of being shut down, maybe it'll be six innings, three runs. Maybe it'll be more of that basic quality start. I'm more worried about the bridge. You saw on Friday night when they didn't have Brazenbaum or Reed Garrett in the game, they went with Blackburn and Kranich, how it spun out of control. And I'm not saying that those guys are locked down. I mean, look, Ryan Stanek couldn't finish an inning today in a blowout, and he couldn't hold a 4-run lead. They had to go to Diaz on Thursday afternoon. So, and he's been up and down. I keep saying I don't think he's a high leverage reliever. I feel like he's more of a 6th or 7th inning guy, and I don't necessarily trust him in a big spot. I haven't. Even last year, I didn't. I mean, he came on late, got a couple of big outs in the postseason, but ultimately they went to guys like Peterson when they needed to get big outs out of the bullpen in the postseason, not Stanek. It was more Maton than it was Stanek. Maybe against the Dodgers they went to Stanek a little bit, and he came through, but I think that was after they exhausted all the possibilities. So, ultimately, it's really going to be interesting as they get a day off tomorrow. They head on the road, and I think it's time for this offense to look itself in the mirror and to go out there and get the job done. That's the one part of this team that really hasn't performed consistently at a high level. You've had the starting pitching perform at a high level. Diaz has finally come around. You've had periods where the bridge to the bullpen was dominant. Even Stanek was really good. Kranich was really good. Now they've regressed back a little bit. Now it's time for the offense, and it's time for the kids to start getting something going consistently. And Alvarez is the one that I think, maybe he's, got a hit today. Maybe it's time for Alvarez. But you got to sustain McNeil. You got to sustain Nimmo. If those two guys fall back, they started to hit, then I think the Mets are in a little bit of trouble because essentially then you're relying on your three stars. And if those guys, and they're not going to always be on, or they, get pitched around, then you're in a lot of trouble. And then the next 2 weeks with the Phillies and the Braves could become somewhat of an ugly scenario. Look, you could put the hammer down. All you got to do is take 3 out of 4 at home. You take 5 out of 7 of the Braves, they're toast. They're done. They're not. This is kind of like their chance to get back into the mix. They think that their expected wins are supposed to be a little bit better than what they've been. We'll see. The Phillies, that's just an old school, hey, mano a mano, first place, second place teams going at it. Mets got round 1 in New York. Now round 2 is in Philadelphia. and away you go. So I know that the story is going to be about the Mets pitching, you know, about the regression, the panic over Senga, no reason to panic. I think the big questions go to what do they do with Clay Holmes long term? I think that that's a very honest conversation, and we're throwing it out there now. And, you know, if they stick with Holmes in the rotation, then, of course, is he going to be effective and available as they get deeper and deeper in October? And then that will mean that they're going to have to go out and get themselves a bridge in the bullpen, because that bullpen bridge needs to improve. And, you know, if they do wind up doing what I suggested, maybe moving later in the year Holmes to the bullpen to kill two birds with one stone, manage his innings, and use him in the best way possible to win this year, then they're going to need a starting pitcher. And what direction do they go? Do they go to chips to the center of the table for a big starter that may be available, like a Sandy Alcantara? Or do they just go out and get, you know, another Paul Blackburn type, somebody who could go out there, give him the six innings, has a diverse repertoire, you know, somebody along the lines of what they've pretty much done with, you know, Griffin Canning and others of his ilk. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. So that's what I have for you here on this Sunday edition of the Talking Mets podcast. Of course, you could continue to go to the newsletter throughout the week. We've been really doing some great premium content. Would love for you to be part of it. Less than a price of a cup of coffee for the month. Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. So more to come as the Mets play the Braves. We take a little blow. Enjoy your Monday and gear up for what is going to be a stressful road trip. And don't be fooled by the Braves' record. Anytime you go to Atlanta and the Mets go down there, they'll probably get big crowds. Those crowds are out for blood. They hate New York down there. It's always a great home field advantage for the Braves. They haven't forgotten that the Mets came back and celebrated and made the postseason on their field. And, you know, there's always been this rivalry. And what better way to get back into the division race than putting the hurt on the Mets in Atlanta this week? So, really kind of a bit of a gut check time. Mets have put a lot of good work in over the last 2 or 3 weeks, getting themselves 20-plus games over 500, building up a little bit of cushion that they've given back a little bit to the Phillies now. So this is really a big week, so we'll see what comes of it. It'll be very interesting, and continue to go to TalkingMets.com, TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G, for updates, and away you go. All right, want to thank everybody for tuning in to this edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. You can check me out, as I said, at the TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G. Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fan Sided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Till then, take care, everybody.